But the first indication we have a good text is manuscript number, and there's no ball game. 5,500 to 650, and that 650 is the very best example. You might have 10 copies of Caesar's Gallic Wars, 10 to 20 copies of Caesar, Tacitus, Pliny. They are among the best ones. Okay. Second, the years, or I should say years, the gap. What is the gap between the earliest copies and the originals? Because the earlier the copies, generally, the better the copies, right? The earlier the copies, the better the copies. And we have most of the New Testament using the year of 100 AD. That's a nice round figure. Using the year 100 AD is the close of the New Testament. Most scholars, liberal, conservative, place the Gospel of John at about 90-95 AD. If we use 100, we have most of the New Testament using 100 AD as ground zero. We have most of the New Testament from plus 100, 150, something like that. Now remember, the smaller numbers are the better numbers here, because you want as small a gap as possible. The classical texts, a great example would be plus 700 or plus 800. And that would be Pliny, Julius Caesar, Plato and Aristotle. If you study philosophy here, or you take a classics degree, you don't realize, because pretty much classical professors, I don't know, I guess maybe they just don't think it's relevant. I've got a friend who took a classics degree at Cornell University. He was reading Plato in the Greek in their classes. The professor never said that this particular work by Plato is plus 1,450 years compared to 100 for most of the New Testament and about 225 years for all of the New Testament. So the gap is great. And lastly, is anything missing? According to most New Testament scholars, none of the New Testament is missing. Now, I'm not... If some of you want to pursue some technical questions, like, aren't there five letters of Paul to the Corinthians? Well, one from the Corinthians to Paul, which we don't care about, and three or four from Paul back to them, of which we have two. That's not what I'm talking about missing. Here's what I mean by missing. Let's say the book of Acts should have had, well, did have, when it was written. Let's say the book of Acts had 50 chapters, and we only have 25 of them. That's missing. You see what I mean? Not... Are there books that nobody's read, that nobody's heard of, that we argue about all day, that virtually there's no evidence? I don't mean that kind of missing. I mean missing like Matthew should have had 42 chapters and only has 28, so we're missing 14 chapters. None of the New Testament's missing. Whereas take some key classical texts, we only have about 50% of Tacitus, maybe the best Roman historian. He wrote 30 books of history. We have 14 complete books and portions of two others. So we have 15 of his books of history, and we might find them in a monastery somewhere, but right now, nobody knows where those other 15 books are. Livy, this is Tacitus. Livy wrote 142 books of history, okay? Over 100 of them are missing. We do not have them. We have about 40 books of Livy's history out of the 140 that he wrote. You say, wait a minute, problem. How do you know Tacitus wrote 30 books if we only have 15? How do you know Livy wrote 142 books if we only have 40? Because there's a couple ways you can tell. What if the books you have are numbered 157 and it's only your 30th, it's only the 30th one you have, but it's numbered 140. Another way is for Tacitus, we are told that Tacitus wrote 30 books of history. And when we count our books, we only have 14 and a half. So they will give you final figures, or maybe you'll have the last book, but you don't have a lot of the in-between books. So for these reasons, manuscript number, manuscript gap, and is any of the manuscript missing, it is virtually undisputed among New Testament scholars that we have essentially what, when I say essentially, somebody's going to argue about this point or that point. When the Dead Sea Scrolls were found in 19, discovered, began to be discovered in 1947, scholars were amazed to compare Dead Sea Isaiah to English versions of Isaiah, different language, centuries from removed from each other, and as one scholar says, except for minor, very minor, does this text, this reading or that reading, the difference between English versions 1,500 years later and B.C., 200 B.C. perhaps, Dead Sea Isaiah, there's just nothing significant. So this is the old way to do it. Then the next step is, the conclusion of this is, we have what the writers intended us to have. And whether you know this or not, if you've ever gone to buy a Bible, you have probably made this decision without even knowing it. Let's say you want to give somebody a gift. Somebody wants a Bible. You want to go buy them a Bible. Just give you an example. And the person behind the counter says, hey, what kind do you have? I have 30 translations. And the guy says, well, what about something that's easy to read? And the guy says, well, I got a Living Bible here. And you go, oh, that is not a translation, it's a paraphrase. You see what you just did? When you say, that's not a translation, that's a paraphrase, what you've just done is said, that text isn't as good as other texts. This is called textual criticism. A lot of Christians think that Christians don't engage in textual criticism, but you do. Textual criticism has to do with the text. It doesn't have to do with the question of inspiration or whether the texts are accurate. It has to do with whether what we have is what the authors wrote. And when you say, oh, no, no, I like to read translation X, because I've done some reading, and that's the most accurate of the translations. Bingo. You just did this. You just drew that. You trusting somebody else's work. But when they say this is the best translation, that's why you go after that, because you want a good one. And when you say that's a paraphrase, you might say, well, I'd like to read a paraphrase. Fine. Go for it. You know? But when you make a point about getting an accurate text, and people argue about the NASB versus the, or the NASV versus the NIV, there are some pretty interesting discussions about which text is more accurate there. Well, that's what they're going after. They're going after these things. Some of you may have been around a few years ago when I debated Anthony Flew here up on your stage the last night of our Veritas in 02. Tony, until just recently, was the best-known philosophical atheist in the world. He became a theist recently, if you heard this. It was huge news last month. It went around the world. At any rate, during one of our dialogues, he was asked by a student, do you question the New Testament text? Best-known atheist scholar in the world. And he said, by no means, the New Testament text is the best text in the ancient world. I'll just give you a little rule. The Old Testament, the strength of the Old Testament is manuscript quality. But the quantity of manuscripts is still very good. It loses to the New Testament. But the Old Testament quality is better than the New Testament quality. All right, the strength of the New Testament is its manuscript number. Both are important, quality and quantity. They're both important. The Old Testament has probably the best quality of any ancient manuscript. And its numbers, I believe, are second only to the New Testament. The New Testament numbers are number one, and its quality is probably second only to the Old Testament. But the strength of the New Testament is its quantity. The strength of the Old Testament is its quality. And by the way, manuscript, number, quantity will also give you quality. If some of you want to pursue that, that would be a question we could talk about. Okay, if you know what the text says, and this is largely not disputed, I mean, someone could hear me and someone could say, oh, that's a joke. We dispute the text all the time. Yes, there are textual questions, but I'm talking big picture. Are there textual questions that would change theology or would change our picture of Jesus? No. Not the big picture. Remember, we're doing an umbrella thing, the general approach. And here's the way I could best say it. I could come today with the most, what you give me what you think is the most liberal New Testament translation, I'd be pleased to use it, and there would be no issues for my talks. So it's just not that much different. Now, Christians are going to get in there and say, yeah, but you know what they do with this verse and with this verse and with this verse? Right. I mean, there are some small things people are going to debate about, but big picture, you can generally use a text with, there's not going to be a problem. And they would be pleased to use one of the conservative ones. It's just not going to change that much. Now, this just says, all this says is, we have what the authors meant us to have. Now, how do you know what the authors wrote was accurate? Okay? I could have the Iliad and conclude that there's no such thing as the Trojan War or no Troy. But I still have what Homer wrote. I can still conclude. Oh, by the way, a little quickie here on the Iliad. The Iliad is only two-thirds the length of the New Testament. It's only two-thirds as long. It only has about 650 manuscripts. Would you expect more or less variant readings on the Iliad when the book is only two-thirds the length of the New Testament, it only has 650 copies compared to a third longer and about 5,000 more manuscripts? Which one do you expect to have more variant readings? New Testament. Just makes sense. Scholars disagree about, I mean, we don't have a lot of Homer scholars around, but I've seen figures anywhere between 10 and 25. Homer's Iliad has between 10 and 25 times more variant reading than the New Testament text does. That's quality. Shorter manuscript, only a fraction of the number of copies, and far more variant readings. That tells you the kind of text we're dealing with. Now, is it accurate? And I'm only going to put a few words up here. I'm not going to be able to argue these for you step by step. But here's where the apologist says, okay, we have a text. Now let's see if that text is accurate. And the umbrella method, second tier from the top, is going to say it corresponds well to what we know about the ancient world. And here's some of the methods they're going to use. First of all, you might talk archaeology. Archaeology is more valuable in the Old Testament than it is in the New Testament. But archaeology, and there's issues here and there with archaeology. But archaeology as a whole, when you can use directions, for example, that Old Testament gives, and find one of David's cities, Ezion and Geber, when you can find the city based on the Old Testament geography, you say, wow, this guy sort of knew what he was talking about. And archaeology is a good way to check some of this out. A second way to check this out is extra-biblical writings. Extra-biblical writings. For example, in the Old Testament, you might want to consult Josephus. In the New Testament, you might want to consult Eusebius. Actually, Eusebius, you can buy these guys in stores today, secondhand shops, bookstores of all sorts. You can get Josephus, Eusebius. But there are a lot of earlier sources, earlier than Eusebius. A lot of Christians are not aware of that. We have sources. If the New Testament ends, a good round figure, if ground zero is 100 AD, we have Christian writings that confirm the New Testament from 95 AD, Clement, 107 AD, Polycarp, or actually Ignatius, 107, Polycarp, 110, 3 years later. Clement, Polycarp, Ignatius, within 10 years of the close of the New Testament canon, we have writings that confirm portions of the New Testament. There's a fourth fellow, Papias. Unfortunately, most of his book, Expositions, has been lost, but there are some fragments. And these guys are real helpful. And here's one thing they're helpful with. Another thing this traditional view is going to say is authorship. Whoops. And date. Who wrote it, and when did they write? And the idea is going to be, I want somebody who's in the place where they can know what happened. Doesn't have to be an eyewitness necessarily. For example, traditionally, Christians say the first and fourth gospels were written by eyewitnesses, by apostles. Traditionally, second and third gospels were written by people who consulted the eyewitnesses. That's the traditional view.